It's been a year since that devastating magnitude 7.8 earthquake struck Nepal. Nearly 9,000 people died and more than 800,000 homes, temples, and ancient monuments collapsed, both in the capital city of Kathmandu and in remote mountainous regions of the country. And in that year, despite media attention and billions of dollars in aid, very little has actually been rebuilt. Joining us now with more is the BBC's Anu Anand. She's in Kathmandu. And Anu, I wonder if we might just start with some of your impressions about how Nepal is marking today's anniversary of the earthquake, if at all.
They are marking it very much so. There was a candlelight vigil Sunday evening here in Darbar Square where I'm standing. I've got an absolutely magnificent view of these ancient palaces and temples. It's a World Heritage Site. And of course, it was heavily, heavily damaged during last year's earthquakes. You can still see collapsed rooftops, beautiful pagoda style roofs, but the tiles have been sliding off, the brickwork still damaged, big cracks in the buildings. And one thing that's really interesting is that some of the older houses that surround this square, which were also very precarious after the earthquake, people have simply sort of braced them with big wooden beams and they've moved back in. But yes, people have been marking it. Apart from the vigil that was here last night, the Prime Minister laid a foundation stone in a house in one of the worst affected areas. But really, I think if you're being honest, the way that people are marking this, it's with a lot of bitterness, a lot of cynicism, because 1 year on, there are still something like 4.5 million people who are essentially homeless. You mentioned that billions of dollars of aid. Well, it's been pledged. A lot of it is in the form of loans. So it's not exactly a sort of a handout that's reached the country. But even so, from the little bit of money that has reached the country, hardly anything has been spent. The government has been very, very, very slow to actually get that money out to people. So you've got a situation where people are homeless, but they're still waiting for the money and also just the materials and the expertise. How do you rebuild a home with boulders and with mud that's not going to fall down on your head again?
Well, so Anu, tell us more about that, because it's astonishing to hear that more than 4 million people are essentially still homeless. I mean, what have you heard from people who have suffered the direct impacts of the earthquake and are still, you know, living in this state of, I don't know, what do you call it, a year later?
Limbo.
Limbo,
yeah.
Yes.
I think it's a state of limbo. Here in Kathmandu, when you drive around, I mean, some of it looks like it's come back to normal. Like there are now vendors out in the Bar Square selling jewelry and statues. It used to be tents, you know, with people living in them. But there are still these little tented cities, tented areas on open ground all around the city. But even so, the tents, they're not even tents, really. They're just bits of plastic you know, bits of bamboo holding them sort of a few feet off the ground, and that's what people are living in. The reasons for this are complicated. You have to understand that Nepal, before this earthquake, went through 10 years of civil war. This week is the anniversary, the 10-year anniversary of the end of that war and a new political compromise, a new political process that began. That political process has been extremely bitter and contentious. And so you don't really have a government that is functional. You have a national government, but certainly at the village level, there haven't been local elections for 17 years. Mm. You put on top of that an earthquake, and you can understand why people are still homeless, why there just isn't the manpower, there just isn't the offices and the mechanics to take that money and to understand how to use it and how to get it out to people. And I think that's why things are still so bad a year after the earthquake. I should just also mention that, you know, a lot of aid experts will say to you, any country that suffers a natural disaster this huge takes a year to start rebuilding. So Nepal isn't unique, but the problem is it doesn't look like things are going to get any better in the next year or two or even three.
I understand also that part of the problem, I mean, you mentioned the Nepal's tumultuous political history over the past 10 plus years, but that in this past year there was an intense battle over drafting a new constitution for the country, and that might have hindered aid from getting in or supplies or furthering the process so that maybe we wouldn't have, you know, all these 4 million people still homeless.
Yes, that has definitely been a difficult process. A lot of people here criticize the government for even trying to draft this new constitution when you've got all of this human need. But Nepal did try to put together a new constitution. It was heavily criticized for being racist, for not including, for not giving equal rights to a lot of minority groups. As a result of that, India, which is Nepal's gigantic southern neighbor and supplies it with 90% of its fuel, 80% of its medicines, India didn't like the way the constitution had come together, and it essentially stopped those fuel supplies going into the country. It was an extraordinarily callous move by New Delhi. They thought that, well, if we do this, you know, it'll very quickly the Nepalese government would capitulate. That didn't happen. It went on for months. The knock-on effects are still being felt, and you're absolutely right. That entire conflict has pushed reconstruction back. It's made the lives, the day-to-day lives of many people, even in the capital, an absolute misery. Just to give you a couple of examples, cooking fuel has doubled or tripled in price, and of course that's had a knock-on effect on the price of food and the price of all sorts of other things. So you've got people who are already not working to the capacity they were, they're not earning to the capacity they were, and now things have been much, much more expensive.
So obviously there was heavy damage in Kathmandu where you are today, but what about more rural and outlying areas of the country?
Well, actually, most of the damage was in those areas. As you know, Nepal is an amazing country, and it's the main topographical features, just endless chains of mountains. When I first saw it, I described it as like if you imagine kind of lumpy icing on a cake. I mean, when you look down, it's just these white peaks everywhere. It's incredibly difficult terrain, and those areas are still in a state of utter devastation. People are still sheltering under bamboo and sheets of tin. They don't have, you know, the concrete, the materials to rebuild. They don't have the money to rebuild. Another really shocking and surprising thing is that, you know, because the earthquake shifted hold land masses, water that used to be underground has moved. So farmers are not being able to tap into their normal sources of water to grow food. So it's had a really, really devastating impact on those areas. And of course, the terrain there is even more treacherous. When the monsoon comes, which it will do in another month or two, you're talking about landslides and floods. You know, this is it's not just hilly here. I mean, these are the world's highest mountains. And if you live on them, you know, an entire week of rain can make your life an absolute misery and can make it very dangerous. So these are all still very much serious issues. Even though it's a year on, people are very, very worried that when the monsoon comes, you know, they're going to have to survive another extraordinarily tough season, even just to see a hope of rebuilding on the other side.
And Anu, I just recalled that we are looking at another climbing season on Everest right now. Of course, climbing being a major source of money and tourism there. There was a huge impact on that a couple of years ago, and then last year with the earthquake. Is this aspect of Nepal's economy bouncing back in any way, shape or form?
It hasn't bounced back. Tourism is one big industry. Another big one that really surprised me, a third of the economy is actually fueled by Nepalese who just go and work abroad and send money home. So all of these things are really important. And it's a sort of vicious circle because, you know, the reconstruction isn't happening. So people are not necessarily going to come and visit these beautiful sites. They're not necessarily going to go back onto these lovely treks. And of course, that again has an impact on the economy. So people are worried about that. And the thing I keep hearing from Nepalese is, yes, please come and visit. We do rely on this trade. Okay, you know, all of our sites are not perhaps in the best shape, but the people are wonderful. And if you come to visit, you will be helping to rebuild this country. That's the message that they want to give to the rest of the world.
The BBC's Anu Anand speaking to us from Kathmandu. Anu, thank you so very much.
Thank you.